Hello and welcome to Roots of Today, the podcast where the past meets the present. With every episode, we journey through time, uncovering the lessons, parallels, and connections between historical milestones and current events to create a deeper understanding of the compelling stories and issues that shape the news. For this week's introduction, let's have story time. Imagine a powerful political leader who feels his agenda is not getting the attention he desires. He might claim he is being censored, or he might simply believe it is being ignored by the mainstream media conspiring to present the opposing viewpoint. Regardless of the reason, this leader decides his best recourse is to create his own outlet where he can freely present his point of view and that of his party, free from any interference by people who potentially stand in his way. This is one of those times where history repeats itself, and sadly, most people do not know it. One could easily assume that I was referring to Donald Trump and his creation of his own social media outlet, Truth Social. But that assumption would be incorrect. Instead, I was referring to Founding Father Alexander Hamilton and the creation of the nation's second oldest newspaper, the New York Post. For this week, we are going to delve into the subject of media bias. Donald Trump has famously labeled most of the mainstream press as both fake news and the enemy of the people. For years, Republicans had decried the problem of media bias as if it is some new phenomenon that began at some point during the Reagan presidency. But the truth is that in most of the nation's history, the media was just as biased and polarized as it is today. Where today we have leftist outlets like CNN and MSNBC on cable news, and newspapers like the New York Times and the Washington Post. On cable news on the right, we have Fox News and Breitbart, and right-leaning newspapers like the New York Post and the Washington Times. If we are going to have a debate about the polarization of the media, then we need to look at the historical record of the news in the United States, because the landscape today may not be as unnatural as everyone likes to believe. As always, this is Alan, your host, reminding you to grab your coffee, tea, or whatever beverage you prefer as we dive in. First, let's start with the New York Post. The New York Post was founded in 1801 by Alexander Hamilton, one of the founding fathers of the United States, the first Secretary of the Treasury, and a leading Federalist. Originally established as the New York Evening Post, the newspaper served as a political instrument to promote Federalist ideas and counteract the Democratic-Republican views of Thomas Jefferson and his supporters. Hamilton, deeply engaged in shaping public opinion, saw the press as a vehicle to influence political discourse. With funding from a group of Federalist investors, Hamilton hired William Coleman as the paper's first editor. Coleman, a lawyer and a strong Federalist himself, worked closely with Hamilton to ensure the editorial stance aligned with the party's ideals. Hamilton founded the New York Post to combat the rise of Jeffersonian democracy, which he viewed as a threat to the federal government's authority and the commercial interests of the Northeastern elites. The newspaper was explicitly partisan, designed to sway public opinion through sharp editorials, political essays, and commentaries. This strategic use of media to shape political narratives was a hallmark of early American journalism, where most newspapers functioned as mouthpieces for political factions. As such, early newspapers like the Post mirror the function in some ways that social media outlets like X, Facebook, Instagram, Truth Social, Blue Sky, TikTok, and others do today. Just as the New York Post was born out of political motivations, many social media platforms today either host partisan content or are accused of harboring ideological bias. Influential figures use these platforms to shape public discourse, similar to how Hamilton used his newspaper. Hamilton used the newspaper to control the political narrative and advocate for his policies. Similarly, politicians, influencers, and organizations now use social media to bypass traditional media and speak directly to the public, framing events and policies to align with their goals. The Post was part of an early form of information warfare, often engaging in heated attacks on political opponents. Today, social media platforms are battlegrounds for political messaging, misinformation, and ideological clashes, often with global consequences. Hamilton understood the power of the press to amplify messages quickly and widely, much like social media's algorithmic amplification today. Both operate on the principle that a compelling message can be disseminated rapidly to shape public perception. Federalist newspapers like The Post helped create ideological echo chambers where readers only consumed content that reinforced their beliefs. Modern algorithms on platforms like Facebook or X similarly create ideological silos, often leading to polarization. Though the medium has changed, the underlying goal of using communication channels to shape public thought, bolster ideologies, and influence power remains largely the same. But here is the problem. If the founding of the New York Post represents an early example of media being used as a strategic political tool, and that practice that has intensified with the rise of social media, was there ever a time when the media tried to disseminate the news without bias? The answer to that question is yes, or at least somewhat yes. By the late 19th and early 20th centuries, the press began to adopt professional standards that emphasized objectivity, factual accuracy, and a broader sense of public responsibility. Remember, before this time, newspapers frequently engaged in personal attacks, published unverified allegations, and made no pretense of impartiality. The partisan press model persisted well into the 19th century, supported in part by political patronage. Government contracts and appointments often sustained friendly papers, ensuring their loyalty and continuation. As a result, newspapers were less concerned with balanced reporting than they were with advancing the causes of their backers. Several developments in the mid to late 19th century began to weaken the partisan model. One major factor was the expansion of the newspaper reading public. As literacy rates rose and cities grew, newspapers faced new commercial incentives to broaden their readership. Papers like the New York Herald, founded by James Gordon Bennett in 1835, began marketing themselves as politically independent, focusing more on sensational stories and breaking news than political polemics. The penny press revolution played a significant role in this transition. These cheap, mass-market papers relied on circulation and advertising rather than party subsidies, which encouraged a broader editorial stance and less overt political bias. While not yet truly objective, this model began to prioritize content that appealed to a diverse urban readership. The true emergence of journalistic integrity came with the professionalization movement of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Influenced by the rise of universities and the adoption of scientific methods across disciplines, journalists began to advocate for standards of impartiality, verification, and ethical conduct. The founding of journalism schools, such as the University of Missouri School of Journalism in 1908, institutionalized these ideals. Journalists and editors began articulating new values. Adolf Ox, after purchasing the New York Times in 1896, committed the paper to a model of reporting, quote, without fear or favor, unquote. Ox's vision marked a departure from the sensationalism of yellow journalism and established a precedent for nonpartisan, fact-based reporting that many other newspapers sought to emulate. The formation of professional bodies such as the American Society of Newspaper Editors in 1922 and the development of codes of ethics solidified the shift toward journalistic integrity. The ASNES canons of journalism, adopted in 1923, called for impartiality, accuracy, and independence. These formal standards helped institutionalize the idea that journalists should serve the public good rather than political interests. By the mid-20th century, newsrooms across the country had adopted fact-checking departments, editorial guidelines, an ombudsman to ensure fair reporting. Investigative journalism, particularly during the Watergate era, highlighted the watchdog role of the press in a democracy, reinforcing the idea that journalists should hold power to account without partisan alignment. Despite these advances, the commitment to unbiased journalism has always been imperfect. Commercial pressures, ownership structures, and audience segmentation continue to influence coverage. The rise of cable news and digital media has, in many ways, reintroduced partisan tendencies under the guise of branding and market targeting. One could make the argument that the golden age of journalistic integrity and objectivity is gone. Despite the professionalization of journalism in the early 20th century, the rise of digital media and 24-hour cable news in the late 20th and early 21st centuries has, in many respects, reversed the industry's movement toward impartiality. The shift to online platforms and the fragmentation of audiences has reignited many of the dynamics that characterized the early partisan press. One of the most frequently cited changes is the economic model driving online news. In the digital marketplace, advertising revenue is tied directly to user engagement, measured in clicks, views, shares, and time spent on page. This has incentivized sensational headlines, emotional content, and rage bait, stories designed to provoke outrage, which tends to generate more engagement. Scholars have argued that this model has contributed to the rise of a polarized media ecosystem where content is tailored to confirm pre-existing beliefs and maximize emotional responses. This shift encourages not only more partisan framing, but also an erosion of traditional editorial gatekeeping in favor of viral potential. Social media algorithms, which prioritize content based on user behavior, have further exacerbated the formation of echo chambers. People increasingly consume news from sources that align with their ideological preferences, leading to fragmented and polarized public discourse. As Eli Pariser famously noted in The Filter Bubble, algorithms create a personalized reality, shielding individuals from opposing viewpoints and reinforcing cognitive biases. Cable news networks have also embraced ideological branding to maintain loyal audiences. Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN have all been critiqued for offering coverage that appeals to specific demographics and political leanings. This segmentation has created parallel narratives around major events, challenging the notion of a shared factual basis for public discussion. Numerous media scholars have concluded that the digital and cable news landscapes have created incentives antithetical to the ideals of objectivity and public service journalism. Matt Carlson, journalism professor at the University of Minnesota, describes this trend as a commodification of outrage, where emotional resonance trumps informational value. Jay Rosen, journalism professor at New York University, has argued that journalism is increasingly being replaced by news as performance, in which pundits act out ideological roles rather than investigate facts. And there is one other factor, the death of newspapers, where there are still some large newspapers like the New York Times, the Washington Post, and others. There was once a time when every town in the United States had a small town newspaper. These papers relied on wire services like the Associated Press, UPI, or Reuters to provide national and international stories. But more importantly, newspapers had the ability to provide the kind of in-depth information that websites and social media outlets do not. And because of this change, today's news consumer is less informed than those 60 years ago, and the repercussions are frightening. In order for a representative democracy to flourish, two things must be true. The news media must act as the watchdog with oversight on the workings of government, and the people must remain vigilant and well-informed to keep the political class accountable for their conduct. Currently, neither of those two things is true. The American press's journey from partisan polemics to professional journalism marked a turning point in democratic governance and public discourse. However, this evolution is not linear nor irreversible. The emergence of the internet, social media, and ideologically branded cable networks has introduced new commercial and technological pressures that threaten to undermine the norms of journalistic integrity. Today, most of the media functions as it did two centuries ago, not as distributors of objective news, but as pushers of politicized propaganda masquerading as such. So, when Trump calls the media fake news, he is partially correct. But what he is not telling you is that the outlets that are pushing a more Trump-favorable version of the news should be labeled fake news as well. And now, more than ever, it is going to be the responsibility of the public to dig through a variety of sources, sometimes wading through partisan programming from both sides, to find something that better resembles objectivity. And this podcast bangs the gong constantly on this issue, because the biggest enemy of a free people is ignorance. Actor Denzel Washington once said in an interview that if you don't listen to the mainstream press, then you are uninformed, but if you do, then you are misinformed. To close out this episode, I will leave you with a simple litmus test. if you can find a news outlet that can criticize Republicans as well as Democrats, or Biden as vigorously as Trump, then that is one to hold on to. Because the news media should be more concerned about what people in power are doing and not their party affiliation. That concludes this week's episode. If you find this podcast informative or entertaining, please like and subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen. The same goes if you tune in on YouTube. Also, if you have anything you would like to add to the conversation, please leave a comment. Until next week, remember to stay informed and fight to keep your political representatives accountable. Your freedom depends on it.